This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Hello, this is Clint Locklear, Trapping Across America on Trapping Radio. And tonight we're gonna cover quite a variety of topics, which we do a lot of times. And I want to talk a little bit before we get into those topics about some business ideas, maybe just to get those brains clicking a little bit. And after that, I'm going to tell you that I have proof, without a doubt, you get an intermission when you're in hell. I've got proof. And we're going to talk about that after the business stuff. And then after that, we're going to go into someone that's not a trapper having problems with bobcats, and I'm going to go through that. I'm kind of doing this for selfish reasons, guys, and I'm going to put on the title, How to Catch a Bobcat in a Cage Trap. That way, when I get the emails and all this stuff I'm getting from the non-trappers, I can just, you know, tell them to search Trapping Radio with that, and then they can get it. And it's probably going to be some good information anyway. Then I'm talking about bobcat trapping with a question that I had on Facebook from DJ about bobcat trapping on public ground, kind of things to think about. And then one of the emails that I just got today is, how did you get started in predator control? Which I will answer that. And that'll probably cover the whole time we have tonight. So starting with a business, I'm always saying you need to find some way to generate your own income streams. And if you're relying on somebody else as far as an employer to do that, I'm kind of cautious on saying you're really taking care of business, because all they have to do is give you a pink slip. And you know what that means. And then you could be, depending on your lifestyle, you could be in really big trouble. And a lot of people say, well, I don't know what to do. There's, you know, I don't, you know, like you're waiting for someone to give you a formula, or just give you personally the only thing that anybody else would know about, or something like that. And that's not how this works, guys. It's based off something that you enjoy or already do or know something about. Then you figure out a way that you can revenue that's the best way to start a business. I'm gonna give you a couple examples real quick, just to kind of blow your mind about it a little bit. When someone goes, well, there's nothing I can do, you're fooling yourself. It's not there's nothing you can do, it's just not you're not opening up your cranial enough to have good information come in. Now, you can't smell this because it's digital audio. But the aroma going through my house right now is driving the cats crazy, and it's driving me crazy. And if you hear a little cat going nuts, we've got a new member of the family called Pesto, seven-week-old kitten, and he's either practicing to be an opera singer or a politician. I'm not sure which, but he talks a lot. But in this smell that's going through our house is bone broth. Now, bone broth, for you that may not know what that is, that's not a soup, it's not stock, it's where you take what I'm doing now is venison, and I roasted the meat, I put it in water, I boil that, not boil it, but I simmer that for about 24 hours with aromatics, garlic, onions, carrots, celery, ginger, stuff like that, and you get all the collagen out of the meat. It's crazy healthy. Like, if you've got stomach problems, ulcers, depression, I mean, it is, when you, if you actually do research on this, it's crazy what this is. It's one of the most highest density nutrient type thing you can do, and you can drink it like coffee, and that's what's going. So bone broth, so I want you to think about that. I'm making it right now in my kitchen. It was not hard to do. Travis, my right hand man, brought me the back legs off a deer he shot day before yesterday. And we cleaned them up, cut them in half, put them in the roaster, and we started this process. Now, you can go do your own research on bone broth. Meat Trapper, a few episodes back, talks about bone broth. If you don't know, you can go back and listen to what he says. But it's really healthy stuff. Now, the reason, see, this is a perfect opportunity for a business, and it's already being done, but there's plenty of space for anybody else to do this. Not saying you should do this, but just think about when you think there's nothing you can do. Now, for me to do this bone broth, I've got to get bones, which is inconvenient for people. I've got to roast them, which is not too bad. It's only about 40 minutes, but then I've got to simmer that for 24 hours. And then you got to strain it out, and you got to, you know, get it where you don't have bones and stuff and all the vegetables and everything that's going to be out of there. So there's work involved. And Americans, like I said, the only thing that American really fears is inconvenience. So it's inconvenient to make this, even though most people would be way better off physically and mentally if they would drink this two or three times a week, because it is that dense with all the gelatins and the minerals that's coming out of the bones and all that type stuff. So there's a lot of people doing this, and then one of the people that was sick started taking it for stomach problems. It really helped him. He read some books about it, because he was not the originator. Don't let that get in your way. Not the originator. And he kept playing around until he got some really good tasting broths that are like better than normal, probably better than mine. and started giving them out to friends, and then, you know, people started wanting to know if they could buy it, and that led him down a road of making bone broth because he was sick to now doing over $500,000 selling bone broth in the city he's at and online. $500,000 business making bone broth. Now, of all businesses, and it's kind of like the lure business. That's the reason it really piqued my interest. You get raw products, you process them one way or the other. You find a market for it, you market it, you know, you have a good product, you get repeat customers, and it's kind of, like I said, it's kind of like the same along lines of lure business, you know, baits and stuff like that, even though this is something you would eat, and my stuff you definitely do not. But, you know, you can buy his. It's $12.99 for, I think, 22 ounces, which is, you know, like a one of our, you know, like a pint and a half. It puts it in these little bags, ships it frozen with a thing. You get it, you reheat it up to a bowl, you put it in your cup, and you get all nice and healthy. Now, think about that a minute. Someone says, well, there's nothing to do. I can't figure out anything to do. The dude's boiling bones. Now, what makes this business model so cool, he's using products that slaughterhouses have a hard time getting rid of. So if he is paying anything for them, it's next to nothing. Now, if you were a gardener, or we're going to grow a garden just for this, and you grew celery, carrots, onions, garlic, don't know if you could grow ginger unless you're down in South Florida or something like that, but you know, different things you found work really good in there. You could grow those, especially if you started from seed, and have almost zero money in this product. Now, say the packaging of that and what's in that, probably realistically, it's costing him maybe $1.20. So you're taking $1.20. Your profit on that is what? 1,100%? Is that right? Yeah. Be 1,100% profit. Now, you got time involved with this, but I'm sure you had set it up where you had several pots cooking, or even bigger pots cooking, and different things like that. And there's all, you know, there's regulations you got to deal with when you're giving food to people, all that. But think about that a minute. But something that he enjoyed, that he needed, that his friends really liked, that he could make, that people don't want to do because it's inconvenient, and now he's got a $500,000 business selling this stuff online. That's pretty freaking amazing. So when you think there's nothing else to do, no one was selling bone broth 2 years ago. Nobody was. You know, you could sell, I mean, you could, if you're into cooking, you could sell stocks, you could do, have spice blends, you could build a business off of that. I mean, you know, like for like me, if I was going to do this, I'd go to the deer processing plants up here, I'd work out a deal with them where every day I'd go get that day's part where they're you know, the backbones, the ribs, the hooves for the collagen and stuff in there, the legs, all that stuff they would gladly give me, or I'd give them a token amount of money, or do something for them, 3 or 4 cases of beer, something, which would be about all that cost me to go get it. I could put it in freezers, I could start cranking that stuff out. I grow everything that he puts in there anyway, except for celery, and that's pretty cheap. So I could put that in there, and I could start a business, and probably in 2 or 3 years of doing some good marketing, throw a podcast with it, do a blog, all that other stuff, especially like the stuff that we talk about in our business course, which we're going to talk about this business in a lot more depth in the business course here coming up. You've got a rock and roll business of bone broth, which is throwaway products. So don't ever think that you can't make money. Now, the other thing that I found interesting, I watched a documentary the other day on Netflix called Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Now, this is a genius business model that if you're a skinny person now, this probably will not work for you. But if you're a healthy dude like me and you wanted to do this, say you're in the 300 to 350 or bigger range and you wanted to start a business, this is how simple it is. It's called dedication to do something like this. This is what he did. He started filming himself. He's fat. He's sick. He's got all these medical problems, which fat people have. And, you know, he's not feeling good and this, that, and the other. So he studies this juicing fast thing, and he does nothing but drink juice from vegetables and fruit for 60 days. He drops 70 pounds, 68 pounds, something like that. In the middle of this journey of his, he finds a truck driver that's way bigger than he is. The guy kind of likes the idea, but doesn't really pay attention. Later on in the documentary, he calls him back. He's in trouble. He's in bad, bad health. He flies back over from Australia to this American trucker, gets him on this program. He loses, I mean, it's over 100 pounds or 120 or 40. I mean, it's amazing. The guy is like crazy healthy, skin glowing. You can see it on film. Now he's out teaching other people how to juice and this, that, and the other. That's the part of the documentary. So that's kind of cool, right? Well, I just kind of clicked into his website. And there, I figured out what the real business model was. He does kind of like Weight Watchers. You know, so much per pound you lose. We walk you through this. We have your coaches, where to get the vegetables, the best kind of juicer, how much you need for your weight, all this, where to go to a doctor, what do you tell the doctor. So he's got these little programs. And I have no idea what his business generates. But he's all over online and people are loving with all the reviews about being on these programs. Now, if you're a fat guy like me, I want you to think about it. You've got a business around your midsection, so don't say you can't start a business. It's around your midsection right now. All the pizza and burger and beer and all that stuff you drank 10 years ago, it's still hanging around. It's there waiting for you to do a business on if you so choose to do so. Start blogging, film yourself, have the way that you lose the weight. You know, if you wanted to, and the thing with the weight loss thing, the juicing definitely works. Now, if you wanted to get crazy, and I'll give you a formula, I guarantee I could lose as much weight as you want to lose. For 60 days, you juice and you drink bone broth. You would never be hungry because you're not going to be hungry when you drink bone broth, trust me. And you're going to have all this nutrient dense from the juice. You're not going to have all the calories. You're going to feel a lot better. You're going to start dropping weight. You're going to have happy people out there saying you're a genius. And then you've got courses, once everybody says you're a genius, that you can start selling online like he does for $39, $69, $129 premier packages for your right arm, whatever it is. And now he's got a business because he's a fat guy and want to lose weight. I mean, it's awesome when you think about it in that term. So think about generating some money when you're doing stuff like that. Now, before we get into the main topics, when I said that intermission has a hell, and I know it does because I've lived through it, last Friday, when y'all were listening to Trapping Radio, my wife said she did not trick me, and I don't think she meant to trick me, but my God, she bamboozled me on this one. Months ago, we went and saw Circus Delay. Y'all probably seen that on TV. It's like the freakiest freak show that's ever been, like a circus, but they got music and lights and makeup and their bugs and they're bouncing off. It is highly entertaining. I mean, highly entertaining. And you're thinking half of them are going to die before the show's over with from what they're doing. It's really cool. Well, in Chattanooga, there was a thing, Circus Delay with a Symphony. We thought, you know, I thought, that it was Circus Delay like we saw, but they had live music instead of being recorded. So we go down Chattanooga and watch it. Oh no, this is just Symphony with somebody every now and then coming out and doing their little skit like they wanted to try out for Circus Delay. Now, let me tell you, I fell asleep a few times. Cindy fell asleep when it was like an hour and a half into this. You know, they gave us intermission. That's the reason I know hell has intermission, because that Symphony thing had intermission. And then we stayed for some reason, I guess because we paid these high dollar price on these tickets anyway, just to get our money's worth of whatever, and we left. So yes, hell does have intermission, and I went through it last Friday night. Okay, now I'm going to break down something. I'm going to read an email real quick. And like I said, this is kind of a selfish thing, but this way I can tag this in a way that I can just send people to it, okay? This is from Bobby. I have a huge problem with bobcats. Just purchased 39 acres in Cross Plains, Texas. Bobcats are coming up directly to our horse barn, walking in the barn, setting the horses, killing our barn cat, set up some game cameras to prove it was a bobcat. I watched your video, but still need help. I want to use a live trap because of our barn cats and dogs. What trap would you suggest and what bait or scent? Do you offer any videos? No, I don't. Watched your video on YouTube. Using flags, I really need help here. One horse hurt himself really bad because the cats come directly into the barn. Thanks, Bobby. Okay. I'm going to start this with something you're not going to want to hear, Bobby. And cage traps are awesome at catching cats, but you're not going to be able to get the population down to zero with cage traps, because cats, once they see something, and if it doesn't work the first time, you're probably not going to get that cat to go back in there. There's things we're going to talk about that'll help that. But if you're really serious about the bobcats and they're causing you problems, and you'll need to catch your cats in a cage trap, fix a stall up like the Hampton or something for, you know, a couple of weeks out of the year, feed them in there, put your dog up, and then go out past the where your horses are out, and you're probably going to have to set real traps. And what I mean by that's a foothold trap. And if you've never played with one, they seem real scary. I understand that. You know, you hear all this stuff about animals chewing their feet off, which is, you know, about on the same lines as Hillary Clinton is an honest person. I mean, it's that kind of myth, so don't worry about that, because it's not true. They'll cut your fingers off, or they'll do this. All of that is just from a bunch of people that don't know anything about trapping. Traps, I've got my fingers in them several times, and you can't tell it. So, you know, I've never lost one, never broke a bone, never done anything. But the reason I'm saying that is you can get a cat to work a foothold set a lot differently and a lot easier than you can a cage trap. And I'm just being honest. You know, I know if you've never done it, or you're scared about using snares or something like that, you know, the first reaction is, I need to go get a cage trap. What you're going to find out is a good cat cage trap is probably going to be $150, $200. The things you get at Tractor Supply and the local co-op, they're too small, they're too shallow from top to bottom. They don't have very good pan systems on there for cats, and it's such a hit and miss when you go about doing that, that you're at such a disadvantage to begin with. A good bobcat cage trap is probably 18 to 24 inches wide and 18 to 20 inches tall, and it's going to be 3 to 4 feet in depth. Now, that's the size of the cage, and you're not going to find that at Tractor Supply. You can get some of the really big dog, what they call like for feral dogs or whatever, those will somewhat work. But the issue with a bobcat is, and a lot of this is going to seem like I'm just being very picky, but I'm not. A bobcat going into a cage is not the issue a lot of times. A lot of times the issue is the pan, the part that he steps on. Some people call it a treadle. The part that fires the trap off. The traps that are not designed for bobcats, they'll be flat on the bottom, then you'll have your pan sticking up on a 45 degree angle and be 4 or 5 inches up. What'll happen most of the time with a bobcat in that situation is he'll go up to that pan, and because now there's this great big hump in front of him, he will keep his feet in front of that pan and lean out to see what you've offered him. So he's not going to set the trap off. The type trap that I would recommend using, you can get from Wildlife Control Supplies. This is one that I personally designed for bobcats. They carry up at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com to get to them. They're not cheap. They're not cheap to make. It's an investment for sure, but you'll see that it's more narrow. It's really tall, and the whole floor of the trap is the pan, and it has a break point. So the bobcat is walking into this thing, and he never knows that he's going on the pan, because he starts off on the pan. When he hits a certain place, it breaks over and the door closes. Now, the cool thing about the door that we have on that trap is if a dog, short of something like a beagle or a chihuahua or something like that, that's probably not going to survive in Texas brush anyway, if a regular sized dog fires that off, it's designed to fire off when part of the dog or the bobcat is still outside the trap. And the reason for that is cats and dogs have two very different reactions when something startles them. A dog will back up. A cat will always go forward. So the reason the door's the way that it is, when it comes down, if it's a bobcat and it clips him in the hindquarters, he's going to bolt forward and he's going to face plant in the front of the cage, and the door's going to go all the way down, which is what you want. Now, if it's a dog, one of your dogs, he steps on the pan, it comes down, hits him on the hind quarter, and he can just back out. And he'll probably bark and look at it funny and pee on it and all kind of different stuff like that. But that's kind of the way that it's designed. Now, there's other traps out there that that you can look at. There's Mercer makes one out of California, I'd recommend. I know there's a gentleman named Comstock that sells some, which I've never used, but he's pretty good at making traps. There's different ones out there, but they need to be designed for bobcats if they're going to be used for bobcats. So that's what I'm saying. Now, there's some interesting things with cages and cats. Okay, rule number one, it has to be where the bobcat's going to be. Just because you put a bait or a lure, mine or anybody else's, and you put it where they're not at, you're not going to catch them. That lure or bait does not have a magical potion that can go out farther than the molecules of the smell can go and call them in, like the, you know, like the little flute player, you know, leading the mice out of town. It does not work like that. You know, you're dealing with a wild animal that has reservations sometimes about different things. So you've got to have it where he's going to be, and trappers call that locations. That location is where the cat's going to be, and most time it's going to be on a travel way with a bobcat. And what we mean by travel way is he's going from somewhere to somewhere, and then you have to understand the habits of the cat. So if you've got a barn and you've got fence rows, those fence rows will be travel ways to that bobcat. So if you've got an acre pasture in front of your barn, just for an example, and on the corners of the acre pasture in front of the barn, you've got some fence rows that go out straight or an angle, makes no difference, and there's some grass and mesquite and stuff growing up in there, that bobcat, it likes being in cover. For one, it hides him, and two, he can hunt. So he's going to come up that fence row to get to the barn. So that's where you would put your trap, would be on something like the fence row. It could be a hedge row. It could be a tree line. It could be a bunch of brush. It could be a thicker area, you know, than everywhere else. The bobcat's automatically going to go to that area anyway. So where you put your trap makes a big difference. Now, it could be in a draw, because if he's below grade, he can hunt while he's there and he's not as visible. Because cats, you know, even though they're wild, they kind of know they shouldn't be going up there and eating your barn cat. So they kind of do it on the sly. And they're, especially if someone's ever popped at them with a .22 or something like that, they've learned that they got to be somewhat cautious. What a bobcat doesn't do is just walk across open ground like he's Godzilla or King Kong, because he's not afraid of anything. That's not the way that a bobcat works. So you need to find the different routes. Like if you were younger and you were going to play Army, and you're going to sneak up on the barn, you just wouldn't walk out in the open. You need to find how you would do that with the BB gun so you could shoot your buddy. That's kind of what you're going to be doing, because you got to have that cover, because that's where a cat's at. So anywhere on there can be that. It can be, you know, if you're going to have to learn what a bobcat track is, what a bobcat scat is, or a bobcat turd is, you know, because they're different from a coyote. They're different from a house dog or a coon or anything else. And you can walk around your property and look for these tracks. And then wherever you find a track or a bobcat scat, that's another great place to put it. Because if a cat's been there before, he's going to go there again. May not be today, this week, or next week, but that there's a reason he was doing that. So that's kind of your locations. Now, I'm a big proponent of using flags. Now, flag can be some fake feathers that you get at Hobby Lobby, or find someone that's got some chickens, and after they, you know, harvest their chickens, can you get the chicken wings from them or something, the feather part, something that kind of moves and flash, an old piece of fur, a CD with some Christmas ornaments or something around it, something that looks strange and out of place to a cat, something he wants to investigate. That's what a flag is. Now, once we find our location, and that's where we're going to put our trap, we want to put our trap where the back, or the opening of the trap is facing the travel way. So if you've got a fence row going out from your barn, you kind of back that up into the fence row, and then he'll walk in front of the trap, not behind it where he can't get in it, but the front. Okay, you've got that, so that's where you're going to put it. You always want to cover the floor of the trap with either, depending on where you're at in Texas, it could be sand, it could be grass, it could be pine straw, it could be anything. But you want him to believe that the ground he's walking on outside of the trap matches the ground on the inside of the trap. If it's just wire, you're going to have a lot of cats that just won't work your set. So you want to cover that bottom. It could, like I said, it can be dirt, sand, anything that's organic, leaves, anything that's natural around there. It's nice and fluffy. It's not on strange feeling metal. And in the back of the trap, what I normally like to do is I'll get a wad of grass, and I will wad it up to about the size of between a softball and a volleyball. And I will find little pieces of feathers. Like I said, you can get them at Hobby Lobby. If you don't know anybody that's got any chicken, just go in their chicken coop and get some feathers that are floating around. And you kind of wad that up in there. And what that does, that mimics a rabbit's nest. That's the way they look in nature. That's kind of like the little door on their house. He'll know what that is, especially with fur or feathers in there. And then on top of that ball, I put cat collector and bobcat urine, or cat collector, which is a lure that I make, and booty call, which is a bobcat gland lure. I want the smell of a cat and a lure. You can get that also by putting a carpet. If you've got if you have a house cat, you got a friend with a house cat, get a piece of carpet, put it in the bottom of their kitty litter box, let them pee on it, do as normal, put some gloves on, cut them up in squares. You can shove that, you know, on the back side of that ball, but you want to have the smell of a cat through urine or scat. Plus, you want to have the lure that goes on the water grass. Above that, I hang a toy of some kind. It can be, again, another small piece of feather or fur. Something will move around in the wind. It could be a fishing lure with a hook cut off of it, you know, like the bass things with the little skirts on them, or it could be kids' toys or whatever it is, but something that looks like something would be fun to play with, eat, or have sex with, because that's about all a bobcat thinks about. And you want that kind of where it's just about 8 inches from the top of the cage over the ball of grass with a lure on it, and it just kind of moves around in the wind. Now on the sides, and that's lured and bait now, you got the stuff in the floor. You can pull up brush to the sides of the cage. Just make sure it doesn't stop the door closing, whatever trap you're using. Kind of pull up some brambles or brush or cut some limbs. Just where the most convenient way for a cat to try to get to the lure in your toy is through the opening, not on the sides. Because if he gets beside your cage, he may not be able to figure out how to get into it. So that's why the position of the trap is where it's facing his travel way. And you block up the sides a little bit, so it's just like a hole that's clear going back to what he wants to investigate. Now, out in front of this is the flag, which can be, you know, a chicken feather, depending on whatever your state laws are, what you can use. Something to just get a cat's attention. If it'll get a three-year-old's attention really well, that's a good cat set. I mean, a good cat flag. So that's kind of the way you're thinking. And you want that to be 4 or 5 feet directly in front of the opening of the cage. And you can hang that off a tree limb if you have a tree limb in the right place, or you can make a little stake with some string, you know, where it arches over and it just kind of flops around in the air. You can do that. What that does is when a bobcat's coming up that travel way, he focuses in on that flag. And he's going to go to that flag. So if it's not in front of the cage, you're going to have problems here. Once he goes to that flag and he realizes he can't eat it, play with it really, or can't have sex with it, he's going to start looking around, because now what he was planning on doing is not going to happen. He's going to see the new toy, start smelling the lure, he's got the opening, and he can walk right in and get caught. That's the premise of how that works. Now, but I will say, I do believe there are bobcats that will not go in a cage. I do believe that. So that's the reason I'm saying you may have to learn how to set a couple of good bobcat sets or get some traps or something. Texas has got a state trapping association that you could go down and see some demos on and stuff like that, or call them and see if there's a trapper in your area that you might run around with or take lessons from or something. Now, the other thing about cages and cats, which is very important, from probably April all the way back around to the middle of January, about the only cats that's going to be on your property are the cats that live there or that's in their home territory. And most of the time, that's going to be females or young cats. Now, those know that territory, and they're when they see something unusual, they go check it out most of the time, which would be your set. But they don't always go in it. Now, here's the thing. If it's after April, all the way coming up to January, that rotation of the calendar, if that's the case and you're using cages and you don't have a catch within 4 days, you need to move the trap. Now, can this be 10 feet away? You can change the flag out. You could put different looking brush on it. You've got to do something to totally change the look of the cage and everything else about it. Because what happens is once a bobcat gets his curiosity filled on something and doesn't change, lure, no lure, bait, no bait, it's irrelevant. Once they get their curiosity filled, they're not going to work that again. Not like some other animals like fox would do. So that's why if it's in that April all the way back up to the middle of January, you're just going to have the resident cats there anyway. And if you don't catch them in 4 days, because they're, trust me, on 39 acres, they'll know it's there. Then you need to move it. It could be on a different travel way. It could be further up and down. It could be closer to the barn. It could be whatever you need to do with it. But you need to move it. Now, between the middle of January to the beginning of April is a different thing that happens in the bobcat world. And that's when the males start roaming around, which are a lot bigger bobcats, and they're roaming around to find a girlfriend. And then that one period, you'll have many cats that'll cross your property, and once they cross it, they'll never return. So you're going to see a lot of stuff going. So if you got traps out, and say like on your trail cams, you know you got three bobcats that's working your barn. And you go out, and because of time, you go out there and it's January 30th or February 15th or something like that, and you put out your cages and you catch three cats, and you think you've got them all, there's a good chance you didn't, because you have this influx of bobcat population that's going on. And you've got to account for that. So really, for your needs, I would say you're dealing with resident bobcats that are kind of used to the barn. A tom is probably not going to go up to a barn, and on 39 acres, he's probably going to be on through and off your property within 24 hours anyway, because the only thing he's worrying about is a girlfriend. He's probably not going to go up to that barn, not unless you got one pinned up in there or something. So that's not really the issue. So that's probably not the best time for you to be setting your cages out during that time. So, you know, like it's November now. You could do this up to mid-January, no problem. I'd shut them down, you know, because you're going to be catching cats. And unless you're wanting to keep them for fur or something like that, you're going to be catching cats that aren't doing the offense to you. So just keep that in mind a little bit. And that's the basics of catching a cat in a cage. Now, there's always, it's like anything else in life. When you first try something, you can do all the reading. You can get all the technical knowledge you want, but it's going to take a little bit of trial and error and learning curve. And that's just natural. You know, in our world today, and I'm saying this because I don't know how much you're in or out of the woods or the brush, or you deal with nature on a daily basis. We as people today think everything should be on our time schedule, and everything that says it should do something comes like with a guarantee or something like that. And when you're dealing with animals, especially bobcats, that does not apply. They're only going to be around when they want to be around. They're only going to work the set when they want to work the set. You can't force them to do anything. And the bottom line is, when you're probably going to suck a little bit at this when you first start, just because you've got a lot of stuff in your mind that you think probably matters or whatever that doesn't. And a lot of things you think doesn't matter really does. And you'll have to work through this learning curve. but it's like anything else. And so don't get frustrated and don't give up too quick when you do this, because once you get this skill down with your farm animals, your farm's going to be in a lot better shape. Because then when you start having problems, you can correct it immediately instead of having losses and hurt horses and stuff like that. So just keep all that in mind, but keep it simple. If you go to my YouTube channel, which is Wolfer Nation, if you go back through, we got a bunch of videos on there, but you will literally see some of where we in Texas use cages to catch bobcats, and we kind of go through that process and stuff like that. So that's Wolfer Nation's the YouTube channel, and then you can get a visual about what's going on. So I hope that helps you out there and gets you in going in the right direction, man. I do. Okay, now the second part I'm going to talk about in tonight's show is, not my wife pretty much has forced me to get back on Facebook. And please, guys, please, if you have a question for me, just put it up on my timeline. The reason for that is I've tried to pay my tech guy several hundred dollars to figure out how to turn off my instant messages. And I'm just being straight honest with you. I like Facebook. I like being able to connect with people. But for time restraints, when I get on there and I get 60 instant messages that someone wants to have conversations, the person that's instant messaging me doesn't understand that there's 59 other people that's done it before him. And for me to give a decent answer is not just a one-word answer most of the time. And then there's usually another question, and that builds up. And then, you know, it gets to where it's like 2-3 hours a day I'm just answering instant messages on Facebook. And I really don't have time for that between the trapping, the lure business, my permaculture farm, spending time with my wife, doing stuff like that. I can't spend 3 hours a day on instant messages. So if you're going to contact me on Facebook and you have a question, unless it's like really personal, you know, like, do you know a doctor? Because I got this, you know, great big wart on the side of my penis or something that's, you know, if it's not really personal like that, just put it on the timeline. And that way I'll be easier to get it, because the other night when I got back on Facebook, I had 73 instant messages within 4 hours. I went through a bunch of them. The messenger, all that has really changed on Facebook since I've been on there. And one of the questions that I'm going to talk about now, I can't go back and find, because it's a new thing Facebook has got it doing from when I did it. So, but it was from DJ, and he was wanting to know about trapping bobcats on public ground, and, you know, any advice on that. And that's definitely not one. Questions like that are so open ended, it's near impossible to do in text. So when you're thinking about bobcat trapping and you're thinking about public ground, enemy number one is other people. It could be hunters, it could be dog walkers, it could be naturists, it could be other trappers, it could be anything. Enemy number one is other people. Now, the reason that's twofold. The first is, if they find your set and they start goofing around with it, there's just as good a chance they're going to take your equipment as not. And I really don't believe, unless it's another trapper or an outdoorsman that's been around trapping before, that most people take your equipment because they're trying to be mean, unless it's an anti or something like that. In that case, they would. And on public ground, sometimes they actually patrol that. They're looking for traps to steal to save the animals. But for the most part, people come across it. They see a funny looking dirt hole, and they see, you know, boot tracks and all this and the other, and they get to goofing around, and all of a sudden a trap fires in the dirt. I guarantee you, most people that's not been around trapping thinks that's probably been left by Jeremiah Johnson himself. They found something in the woods from a mountain man, or it's been there since the 1960s and it's an antique or something like that, and they don't think about it and they don't take it. Then they take it. Now, the other part is people just being malicious. Sometimes other trappers steal you blind. Sometimes dog hunters do it. Sometimes antis people do it. Sometimes people are just mean, and they like stealing from people. So your people is going to be the main thing you got to worry about with that. So you've got to think about the people in terms of two ways: your set and then the catch. So when you're looking on public ground, you've got to separate the operation you're doing into two different categories. I don't need people to see the set or know what it is. And then I don't need the animal to be, like for an example, bouncing around on an 18-inch chain on the side of a logging road in National Forest somewhere. You're asking for trouble if you do that. So the first thing is the set. Now, when you look at my bobcat sets that I do like in Texas, or I do on private ground around here or the other states that I trap in, they're really showy and they're really childish looking in a way. So even if someone is not a trapper, they're going to know something is going on there. They're probably not going to know what it is, but most people, if they're out just bouncing around in the woods and they see something really strange, you're going to start looking it over, and then they find your equipment. You know, and one big question I always get is flags. Now, you go hang a turkey feather on the side of a logging road, someone's either going to steal it just because they can, or they're going to realize there's a trapper there and start looking for a trap, or you're just going to get them to stop and then you're going to have the problem. So if I'm on public ground or I'm close to a road where I know it can be seen, I totally switch gears on the flag. Now, the principles that I talk about in Cat Collector, and I've did my demos and all that, that stays exactly the same. My flag, though, will drastically change. Most of the time, it's just a piece of cardboard that has been sprayed down real heavy with Scotchgard so it doesn't melt in the rain. And it's on a string, just like a regular flag, but it looks like a piece of cardboard up in a tree, and no one's going to pay attention to that because it's normally only about 2 or 3 inches round. Now, I smear Unfair Advantage on one side of that, which is that glow-in-the-dark lure that I've got. During the daytime, it just looks like a piece of cardboard, but at night, it glows. So when it's moving around in the wind, it really gets the cat's attention. But when most people are in the woods, it doesn't, because it's just a piece of cardboard. The other thing is your set. You might, instead of having a clean chute where you go back on a set like mine, you may want to have it more blended in, just so it doesn't stand out so much. Your blocking, make it try to look more natural, like a couple of tree limbs fell down to give you the side blocking that I show, you know, instead of having sticks straight up in the air or something like that. My guide sticks that I use on the jaws are a lot shorter and different things, just so it doesn't stand out so much. Now, I might use a big dirt hole with that, and there may be a couple of feathers and stuff on there, but I'm not going to just like take a big handful of down feathers out of a pillow and sling it down on that hole like I do a lot of times you've seen me on video, because it stands out so much. You know, you're not going to be able to have the best cat sets around people if you're around any type of people travel ways, as you will. If you're on private ground, you get way off the road. So keep that in mind when you're on public ground. Now, one way to do that is use these things that none of us trappers want to use anymore, but it's a pretty neat piece of equipment. It's called boots. Now, if you've got a draw coming up to a road and you can walk 40 feet or 100 yards down that draw and put your regular bobcat set in where it is not seen from the road at all, and you don't see where people are walking up and down that thing, I'd go as normal at that point, but you're going to have to get away from the road or the trail to do that. So be willing to do some more walking if you're going to be on public ground where other people are going to be. I mean, you really do. And I would still tone down the flag. As far as the feathers around the hole and in the hole or sticking out or something, it's probably not going to make that much difference if you're off the road, and it really helps on the cats. You know, you look at things. If you've got a travel way coming up to a road or a trail that you're on, is there within 50 feet or 100 feet of the road, is there, you know, some cactus or some type of rhododendrons of some kind, or river cane, something that's evergreen, or a tree that fell over, something that you can put the set behind from the road, but the cat can still see from the travel way where he's going up and down it. So you got to be really sneaky, because the people is the big problem. And it's not always convenient, and you're probably not always going to be on the absolute best location that you can be. But you'll still catch cats. It's just not always optimum when you're doing what I'm talking about. Now, the other part you got to worry about, the second part for the main thing, is after you make the catch. One of the reasons I really like drags is because if there is a side of an open trail or a little bit of a field or something like that, and I put a set in, I can take that drag back in the brush or back into the woods or back over a hill and pre-hook it. And then that bobcat, most of the time, nothing's 100%, will end up the length of the chain away from the open field, away from people. Now, you can do that with extension cables instead of using a drag. If it's thick brush and stuff like that, and I'm using blind sets, I see cats going down a smaller trail and I blind set, the drags allow the cat most of the time to be inside a cover. And the cool thing about a cat is he will sit still until the person locks eyes with him. So if someone's walking down that trail, you could have a bobcat 10 foot off the trail in some cover, and that bobcat won't move a muscle, and 99 out of 100 people today will walk right past that cat and never see it, and it'll never move, it'll never make a noise. Now, that's a different story if the hiker looks over and he locks eyes with that cat. Now the cat's going to start growling, hissing, jumping around. Totally different. But for the most part, that'll save you a lot of headache, is just letting him get away. Now, if you don't have like saber-tooth drags like I use, or the drags that Chip builds from Expandapan, you know, don't use the little bitty, the little old-timey bent re-rod and all that crap type stuff. You'll be looking for cats forever. If you don't have a good drag, like the one that F&T sells or Chip sells, then cut you a log where it's, or, you know, or get you some old limbs where they're probably 4 or 5 inches round, 4 or 5 feet long, put your long extension cable on there, cinch that up really good, and the cat won't go very far. You'll be better off with that than you would be with a little bit chintzy drag anyway. So that'll really help. You know, think about what happens when you catch something in your trap, because that's the second part of this equation you really got to think about. If someone's going down the road and you've got the cat off in a dip and he's 20 foot off the road, the cat's really not going to make any movement. So you're probably good. But if you put the cat where it feels exposed and you're nailing him with a stake, and he's exposed when someone, vehicle or not, is coming down that, he's going to go berserk trying to get away because you, the trapper, have not given him the chance to feel comfortable. So longer chains or extension cables with your cats. Think about people at all times. You're still going to get some stuff stolen. Don't throw a hissy fit about it. Don't let it ruin your day. You know, because if you do, this is what I want you to think about. And this goes for a lot of different things, guys. When you let somebody get you mad and you're fuming about it all day and you're fantasizing over breaking their legs and tearing their jugular out and burning their house down and all that type stuff and coming back setting up trail cams, do you know what you're really doing? You gave that person all of your power and you're giving them rent-free space in your head that is costing them nothing. And they're screwing with you for hours after you find out what happened. And that is a mental weakness that people have. You know, traps are going to get stolen, guys. They're going to. That's part of the game. If you don't want that to ever happen, you can't ever set a trap. So you're going to have traps stolen. But if you let that ruin your day, because you can see it on Facebook, and I've talked to guys at shows, I mean, they're still fuming 3 weeks after it or 6 months after it, and they're talking about how they're going to get back even and this, that, and the other. I guarantee you that person has spent probably 3 or 4 days worth of hours fuming over trying to get back at this person, this, that, and the other. And think of all that wasted energy and stuff that went on. When a trap gets stolen, try to learn from it and go on. You know, give yourself the 30-second rule. You're allowed to cuss and scream and spit and throw stuff and do whatever you want to do for 30 seconds. After 30 seconds, you're not allowed to think about it anymore.
your life will be better off. Not just in trapping, but in most things people get mad about. Because them finding that trap sometimes is out of your control. And once they steal it, if it's just someone rambling around, they're never coming back anyway. So, I mean, you can try to set booby traps or whatever, but you're wasting your time. So don't give that up. So when I'm thinking about public ground, DJ, that's the two things that I think is probably the most important that you have to keep in mind so you don't get in trouble when you're out there on the line. So this is the last question I'm going to go into. And Clint, I was wondering, how did you get into Predator Control Group? How did the Predator Control Group start out? There's not hardly any predator control companies I know of in my part of the state of Illinois. Most of what is done is pest control, people, bugs, snakes, bats, and such. I only think of one guy that does actual predator coon, bobcat, and fox. The guy's retired and does it to keep busy. Got me thinking, how did it start for you? Always thought it would be a good business to start, but I'm not a fan of heights. And after doing HVAC work for a couple of years, crawl spaces or something, I'm not fond of either. Brother, I'm right there with you. I love jumping out of airplanes, I'll be honest with you. You put me in a tree stand or on top of my roof, clean up my gutters, I'm petrified. So the height thing, and I'm too big to be crawling around inside of under houses. I don't even like going under my own. That's the reason I never got into any of that. But how I got in predator control, I mean, it's a journey, dude. I mean, I never intended, to be honest with you, to get in predator control. That was never like my plan. You know, my plan was just to make a living trapping. That was my plan. And whatever it took was pretty much my business plan or my operations order. And that's the way that I went about it. But how it happened for me is I came back from Alaska. For a couple of years, I bounced around and started doing a whole lot more trapping. I started doing some long lining around the state of Tennessee and a couple of other states, and, you know, started really getting my feet up under me where I was pretty competent. And then when I was used to live over in Cleveland, there was a lot of beaver and stuff, kind of like where I live now, south. And I was running this long line. It was an hour before I ever started the line that I'd run about 2.5 hours in this great big old loop if you just drove, and then I'd have to drive back home. But there was a lot of beaver and there was a lot of raccoons. And what happened is one day I'm pulling beaver out of a creek, and this little bitty guy, which actually was president of the Farm Bureau, came up and asked me what I was doing. And I could tell he wasn't a farmer and he wasn't aggressive, so I just told him. And you know, he shook my hand and he was like, man, I got these places over here. And then that led to me, and this is not predator, but this is how it happened. I started getting a lot of permissions in that county that I've never been in before. And it's an hour and a half from the house. During that, I started the season on bobcats and coyotes, and that market really went south. And I was really concentrating on the coons. And then in the middle of the season, that went to dang near nothing. And I knew there was a lot of beaver, and the prices on beaver hadn't really crashed yet. So I transitioned over to beaver, and I started really waylaying beaver. Because when I first went to Marion County, you could stop at any creek, any pond, any section of the river with a bridge and catch beaver. I've never seen anything like that. Not over the distance that it was. It's not like that now, but it was then. And so I'm catching, you know, 15, 20 beaver a day, plus a bunch of coons and stuff like that. And that's when this guy found me and started giving me all these permissions. So now I'm starting to really rack up. I had days back when I was doing that of over 40 beaver in a day, you know, running down here and running traps. I was doing it very basically, didn't know as much about beaver then, but I had tenacity. And well, then the beaver market crashed. And I could not justify driving an hour and a half from my house down to Marion County to trap on these permissions for a beaver that went from about $18 a piece down to about $6 a piece, $8 even put up. So basically, I started pulling traps. And then the farmers saw me pulling traps and they started asking questions. I explained to them. They kind of understood. But anyway, one of those called the guy that kind of got all this started, and he found me while I was pulling traps, and I'm in waders and everything else. And he drags me up to the courthouse to meet the county executive, which his name was Hal Moss. I don't know who's down there now, but this guy was Hal Moss. And he was a farmer that I've actually was trapping on. And he asked me why I was pulling the traps. And I told him the market went down. There's just, I cannot justify driving over here because of time. And I'm catching something that I really can't make any money on at all. Not with, with all the distance of driving. And before I left that office, I was hired by the county for 10 months out of the year, beaver control. Now, this went on for a couple of years, and but I was, now I'm starting to get farmers asking me about coyotes because goats started coming in at that time for the Hispanics and different things like that. And, of course, you have cows and horses and house cats and all that stuff that every rural place has. And the coyote numbers were high. So I started getting questions on trapping them. But see, I was hired by the county to do beaver. And I did not feel right to start trapping coyotes under getting paid with them. And it was a full-time job with them. So I told them, you know, they had to work that out with the county. Well, about 3 weeks before my second or third contract renewal came up, they asked me to come talk at the Farm Bureau meeting down in Jasper, Tennessee. I go down there, didn't know what to expect. I give a small talk about this, that, and the other, and I knew what was going to happen because all the farmers have got together with me, and they told me that they're setting up Hal Moss to make a decision so I could trap coyotes, and I let them play their game because politics is a weird thing. So I'm up there, and I'm giving my talk, and I asked, you know, gave him all the numbers and, you know, the difference we're seeing, yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, you have any questions and a few questions. And one of the farmers said, I've got coyote problems. Do you know how to catch coyotes? Yes, sir, I do. Well, how come you're not trapping coyotes? And I said, well, to be honest, the county has got me under contract to trap beaver and not coyotes. And I don't feel right about during that time allotment to be trapping something they're not paying me for, because that wouldn't be honest. And then another farmer that was sitting next to Hal on purpose turned around to him and said, do you care if he traps coyotes under the contract? And all the farmers in the room that were having coyote problems were staring, I mean, just eye screwing this dude to death. I mean, he didn't have any choice. He's an elected official. So with all that pressure, he said, yes, he can trap whatever y'all need him to trap. So then I started trapping coyotes, and you know, I'm still catching beaver. I'm still catching about 500-600 beaver a year, but now I'm bumping up to 200-300 coyotes because, you know, I'm running a lot of fence snares and stuff like that. Reputation started to grow, and then a couple of years after that, they had a big change in the commission, and they were trying to find a job for one of the guys that was on the board for a job. And my contract was about the same that they could give him a job for, so they cut me. Now, that left me out in the cold, which was kind of fine, but I didn't know quite what to do. But during this time, I've had a lot of people from different places because just word travels. You know, we got a guy over here that you tell him he's got coyote problems in 3 or 4 days, he's got 5 or 6 of them in his truck. You know, that spreads. Then I started getting these phone calls about people wanting to come trap. And then that was like, well, you know, coyotes out of season, you know, not out of season, but out of promise, because you don't have out of season here for trapping coyotes. But, you know, I started charging. Okay, it's going to cost me so much to go up there. You know, I'm not going to work for slave labor, so I need to make, you know, if I remember right, it was $100 a day. Pretty much is what I charged to go. And I would try to get 3 or 4 of these jobs going. You can see how that money starts stacking up. And then the reputation kind of went further. Next, I'm getting calls from different states and brother-in-laws from, you know, across the country and this, that, and the other. And then one of the places that I was trapping for had a biologist that wanted to do a study. They needed a trapper. I already knew the guy that owned the land. I've already caught coyotes for him before. So that kind of led me into that. That jumped me into the QDMA because that's where the study was being all promoted at, different things like that. So, and then that just expanded from there. So that's how I got started. Like I said, it was not a plan per se, but there's some things in there that I think you should pay attention to. One of them was people knew that I was trapping. So the first thing you got to do is let people know that you trap. The second thing is you've got to get a reputation that you know how to catch coyotes. And once you get that reputation, word kind of just shows up from some weird places. And then once that starts and you have the reputation, see the hard thing to get across is like a line. You're trapping, you know how to catch some coyotes, and you're saying you're under this line of making money. Now, you're kind of building your reputation, but you don't have that big of a reputation or people don't know that much about you, and then you're going to ask for money. It's like this ceiling that's really hard to cross. But once your reputation and enough people tell this guy and that guy, and I know this guy, yeah, I've heard of him, you know, heard he does a really good job, never leaves the gate open, he doesn't tear up the fields, you know, he doesn't try to screw the sheep or anything like that, all that's good, that as that spreads, it's like a different, it's not just he knows how, it's he's competent and he's like professional when he's about it. We never have any problems for it. And then once you get across that line, that ceiling, if you want to call it that, then it's much easier to charge. The problem is when you're getting up close to that ceiling, that's a frustrating time to try to do predator control. Because a lot of people, even still today, they think that a trapper is going to go out there and spend all his money on lures and gas and trucks and traps and clothes and all that stuff that goes along with trapping. And they're going to run, you know, half hour or an hour away to do it to catch a $3, $5, $15, $20 animal. And from a business point of view, if you're going all the way out there to do that, you're losing money. So it's almost like, you know, my advice to start predator control, I wish you could say, and you could probably get some work, but you'd be able to write the check that you're spouting off about, is you could start a website, you could really get close into the SEO. If you don't know a lot about this stuff, you can come on board on our business course. It'll be opening after the first of the year. We go into the SEOs and setting up websites and all that type stuff. And you can really get it down so when anybody in your area is Googling predator control, they're going to come up with you. And then you're going to have to go out and you're going to have to assess. And then the next thing is, what do you charge? And, you know, and that always freaks people out because they don't want to, you know, it's kind of like trappers are kind of in the same boats. There's a guy named Joe Salatin's got a farm up in Virginia. He's a pretty wealthy guy now just off of farming the way that he farms. And he has this story he talks about, and he did a study one time. If you saw your farmer coming to the farmer's market in a Mercedes-Benz, would you feel good or bad about that? And most people said bad, because a farmer shouldn't be driving Mercedes-Benz. You know, they shouldn't be making that much money to feed people. This weird idea people have. Well, it's the same with trapping. If the people, that's just the kind of the context that it is. So you need to be able to get across that line and be able to have that professionalism part there, that when you start asking for money, it's not such a struggle for somebody to get a hold of. Now, if you're going that and you do the websites and you have your business cards and you got a reputation, that's a lot easier. But starting right out of the gate is really tough. And I wish I could say that there's an easy way to do this, but that I don't know what it is. You know, you can really market it hard, but you're going to have to know how to do that. And if you're not doing it online, it's going to cost a lot of money. We've talked about it before. You got to go find out who your customers would be. You know, are they going to be deer guys? Are they going to be rabbit guys, farmers, deer pens, quail people, whatever it is? And then you got to start marketing to those people. And the best way to market, and I want everybody to listen to this, the best way to market is to build relationships. So if you meet somebody and you're talking about coyotes, and they're kind of, you're kind of feeling each other out. Don't try to hard sell them. Don't try to get them to give you a commitment. All that stuff that worked back in the 80s does not work now. Build a relationship with them. Find out about their family and how long they've had the farm. And, you know, like the gentleman with the bobcat hurting his horse. Well, how long have you had the horse? And, you know, is that one your kids ride? Or, man, that sucks and stuff like that. And, you know, and you just kind of, you build the business part will come. But the relationship part is the important part. That's what solidifies everything. Because just like you don't like someone hard selling you, just because you're desperate for money and you try to hard sell someone else, that's what we in the business world call the stink of despair, or the stank of despair. Depends on your background. So if you're too desperate to get the job, you're probably not going to get the job because you stink. I mean, they don't know what it is, but if you're a good coyote trapper, why are you so desperate to get a job? Something's wrong here. And they're thinking just the way you would if someone came up with you with a stink of despair. You know, so find out where your customer's at. Find out, you know, one big thing you need to figure out is if you're going to be in, you know, in, I believe the email was Illinois, I guarantee you within a couple of counties, there's two or three farmers that are the boss dogs up there. They're the guys that everybody listens to. If they get a Ford, everybody gets a Ford truck. If they wear Carhartts, everybody wears Carhartts. If they put pink racing stripes on their John Deere tractor, everybody be putting pink racing stripes on their John Deere tractor. Every place has got something like that. There's two of those here in our valley. I know who they are. I've got relationships with both of them. You find out who they are. You know, if y'all need any help putting in fence posts or putting up wire, or you get cows out and you're short of help, you know, I'm out here a lot of times trapping anyway, so just give me a call on the sale or whatever. And eventually, stop by and don't try to sell them. Just see if you can help them somehow, or see how they're going, or their kids in football, or whatever. And you build this relationship, and once you get the, what those are called influence makers, and once you get the influence makers that are in that area, and they start knowing that you're looking for work, now you've got an unfair advantage on everybody else, because if the guys everybody watches or listens to, they're kind of like the big guys, and it doesn't mean money, it just means their influence. And they hear so-and-so's got a coyote problem, and they know that you coyote trap and you've got a relationship with them, they will sell you that job for you. They will go there, and it's much easier to get a job that way because A's talking to B and you're not even involved in the conversation. You just get a call. I heard you're the guy. I need you to come out. You know, let's talk about what you charge. There you go. You know, but how I got started, I wish I could have a formula for everybody to do this. I really do. It just didn't work out that way. That's the reason I went through the story the way that I did it, because it's not a formula and it's not some type of magic potion. It's one of those things, like the old saying goes, opportunity usually comes with sweat and overalls. You know, but most people don't want the sweat and they don't want the overalls. And I'm not saying that you're that way, but that's kind of the way that everybody that I know of that's done very good at this, that's how it works. They're either very good at building relationships or they're very good at building a reputation. And the last thing I'm going to talk about is building the reputation. If you've got to tell people you're a great coyote trapper, you're not. Let me say that again. If you've got to tell people you're a great coyote trapper, in their mind, you are not. So don't go around telling everybody you're the greatest coyote trapper. You let your abilities speak for themselves. No one likes an arrogant, smart butt when they're thinking about doing business with them. Nobody wants to deal with somebody like that. You know, I'm the best coyote trapper in three counties and I catch more than anybody. No. If you want to be in predator control, you don't go about it that route. There's a lot of guys that's tried to come in to the industry of predator control, if you want to call it an industry, and they come in beating chest and jumping on chairs and bragging and putting everybody else down to make themselves. And you know where they're at? Nowhere. They never made any money. They never got any traction. They never did anything. Because reputation is not built on what the person that what the person that it's about says it is. It's about what other people say it is. And that's the type of reputation you get. Like around here, where I live, up and down this valley, over where I used to live in Meigs County, anybody's got a trapping problem, my phone rings. And you know, I've gave so much work away to people that are closer to them and that, just because I can't do that much, you know, and that's locally. But it came because you'd be surprised how close communities are, even though communities don't think they are. Someone knows someone, you know, you always hear a six something separation or whatever, and you know everybody in the world. Well, in a community, it's probably like two. So that's what you're building on. And, you know, when you just be helpful, be courteous, really go out of your way to do a better job than they thought you could do. And for goodness sake, don't oversell what your capability is or what the animals are. Because if the guy that owns the land, which didn't know anything about coyotes, thinks he's got 100 coyotes on 100 acres, and you go, yep, I can get them, and you catch 12, and there's only 12 on that 100 acres, and there's only been 12 on that 100 acres for the whole year, you're a dirtbag, and why are you charging me? Because, you know, you got 88 more to go. So, you know, if you can't oversell what you can do, and you can't oversell what the population is, and a lot of times that will cause conflict. You're better off just to go, well, if you're not going to be happy if I don't catch 100, I would rather, you know, keep you as a friend and instead of take your money and you be disappointed, because I'm sorry, but it's not going to happen no matter who tries it, because there's not 100 here. I can't do that. And most people, when you put it that way, will kind of back up and rethink, you know. But don't oversell what you can do, and build that reputation that other people talk about you, not what you talk about. And it's not going to, I guarantee you, it's not going to be overnight. It's one of those things that you build up over years, and then all of a sudden you just look around one day and you're like, my goodness, I'm busy. And you didn't even realize that was happening until you just kind of look around and go, man, I got to start turning people down. You know, this is ridiculous. I ain't seen my wife on an anniversary. I ain't been home for our birthdays. You know, about the only time I'm there is on Christmas, and I'm usually loading traps to go somewhere else, you know, after we open presents. And you kind of go around and go, well, I guess this is what made it is. And, you know, that's kind of how it works. You know, it's not a quick, easy process. It's not a formula. It's not anything like that. And it's just sucking it up and doing what you need to do until that reputation helps sell you. But, you know, it's like anything else, and I've told several people this, and it turns them off. If you want to be a professional trapper and predator control or anything else, trapping is only about 30% of your business. That is it. You can be the best trapper in the world and be broke all the time. And I can historically give you names, which I'm not going to do because of there's no reason to talk bad about people. But there are some of the best trappers in the trapping industry all the way back through the 50s. Amazing trappers that were broke all the time. So about 30% of your predator control is trapping. The other 70% of your business that really makes a difference is business. And when you get into that 70%, it doesn't matter if you're selling kayaks or Jeeps or deer hunts or anything else. It's all the same. You've got to know your customer. You've got to be able to market to your customer. You got to meet those needs. You've got to have your books in order for the state and everything else. You've got to be able to communicate. You've got to be able to schedule. You've got to be able to do all that. That's the real part of Predator Control Group that most trappers fail at, because a technician is a trapper. A welder is a technician. a carpenter is a technician. That doesn't mean they know how to make money with carpentry. They're just really good at carpentry. Now, you can have someone that's not as good, and I'll tell you, there's guys out there that are way better trappers than I am, and they just struggle with money all the time. And it's because they haven't taken the time to learn the business part, or they think because they're great, money's just going to show up, and it doesn't work that way. You know, so that 70% is how, because it doesn't make a difference if you're selling chickens or you're selling predator control. You've got to do everything to get that through the process, and that's not physically going out and catching a coyote. Because the trapping part is actually the fun and easy part of it, and everything else is just running a business just like you were a Fortune 500 company. And that's the way that it is. But if you want to do it, man, you know, start catching coyotes and helping farmers out, or whoever it is you think your customers are going to be. Let that reputation build itself. And see, that's the thing. Once you get a reputation, or social capital is what I like to call it more than that, you know, once that social capital is built, you never know where that's going to go. Because when I first started longlining, I never knew that was going to end me up in a contract trapping beaver for 10 months out of the year. That was going to end me up in going to places like Texas and doing the Texas Predator School and all that for 60, 70 days out of a winter while I went to different states in between. Never once. That was not a plan. But that social capital kept building, and stuff just kind of shows up. Now, if you don't have the social capital, hardly anything ever shows up, because you've got to pay a little bit to get a little bit. And that's a huge lesson in business. It's not a, I just make money and you pay me. That's not how it works. So when you build this social capital up, however it is you need to build it, that's when really cool stuff starts happening. You'll get phone calls and meet people that'll lead you in directions that you've never thought about. You'll have phone calls and people that'll give you jobs you never thought were ever possibly in the realm. You'll meet people that you see on TV, you know, that need help. I mean, it is, the world's not that big. It's really not, especially in the outdoors of anything. So that social capital is the best way to go about it. So, man, I wish you luck. I know you can do it if you set your mind to it and you're smart about it. And I hope you do really good. Now, for everybody else out there, you know, a lot of y'all have already started your trapping season. We haven't here. We just actually had our first cool night of 48 degrees. So it's kind of hard for me to think it's that close to trapping season, because we've been in the high 80s. But for y'all guys out there, man, string some of them chains for me just to make me feel good knowing you're doing it for me. And y'all have a good time out there on the line. And I'll talk to y'all next week.